Over the next few years, Australians are expected to be renovating their homes or investment properties in record numbers. Whether inspired by reality TV shows or a canny instinct for making money in real estate, renovating certainly is big business. But renovating your investment property rather than your home with the aim of selling it on and making a killing can seem a little bit daunting, especially if you're not a practical type. But my next guest believes that just about anyone can add maximum value to the right property using a small amount of money in the shortest possible time. Patrick Bright, a bloke with 20 years' experience as real estate property investor, has written a book called The Insider's Guide to Renovating for Profit. It's something we're going to investigate together tonight. Good to see you again, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here, Tony.
It's on a per capita basis. Why are we among the world's most enthusiastic renovators?
I'm really not too sure, actually, why we're so enthusiastic about it, but it could be something to do with, we're very passionate about our property. Something that we're very passionate about, and I guess it just spills over into renovating as well. It's also something that people tend to do a little bit more when markets stagnate or move sideways, which we've seen some of our capital cities doing that, even going backwards over the last few years. So that is a way of adding value when the market's not doing it.
As an investor, I mean, how do you see the property market over the next 5 years? Do you think we may see some more downturns, or are you a bit bullish?
Well, I think it's a bit mixed, really. It's going to definitely have an impact on what happens coming out of Europe and things like that. It's going to have an impact on their jobs. It's going to have an impact on where rates sit. Now, I'm not an expert in forecasting the market, so it's not something I read is what all the forecasters are saying. And if you took a consensus of where they're saying, they're actually quite uncertain. And it seems to be that 11 out of 10 forecasters over the last few years have got it wrong. So it's very hard if they're full-time at it and nothing else but, and they're not quite too sure and getting it, missing it.
Absolutely. The
market. It's pretty tough to pick. But when you look at our, and every capital city is different, and it's got different things, and it's going through different parts of the cycle of how the markets move. So, one capital city is going to do okay, others is not going to do so well.
So I'm not an expert in this area, but I think there's one thing that I've learnt through the years is, buy at the best possible price. It really does set the property up either to be, a financial failure or a financial success for you if you get it at the right price.
It is certainly important. It's certainly a key factor. And that's something that some people actually focus on too much. So they'll go in and buy a cheap property that they want to do up. So they think, I'll get the cheapest property, or just even something that's not, doesn't need to be done up.
It's the old formula, the worst house on the best street.
Yeah, but that's if you get that right. A lot of people actually buy a rundown or a not so great property in a not so great position or street, and because they bought it because it was cheap or it was 20% below the average or the median price. Problem is, if it's in a poor location, you can't really improve that location, but you can improve the property. So you're better off buying a property that's not in great nick, that was something that I would say is in an A or B grade position, but it's in a D grade condition. We can fix the D grade condition, we just can't fix the position.
Sure. Are there a couple of things that you really should be mindful of if you're looking to buy an investment property to start with?
For sure. You certainly want to look at certain of your tenant rentability. So you want to look at supply and demand, which is a very key factor wherever you're buying, whether that's Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, any capital city or any regional centre. So if you're going to go into regional centres, focus on regional centres with lots of job opportunities and industries that aren't reliant on one, which people stuff up a lot. Going into mining towns, some people are winning, but a lot of people are losing. And, that mine finishes or it changes, or, there could be six or seven industries hanging off the mining industry alone, with supplying it with food and diesel and all those sorts of things. And though when they go, so does the market. It falls through the floor and there's no one there to pick it up. So you want to go with an area that's got good long-term prospects.
So I was watching international TV a couple of days ago, and they were suggesting that the most expensive real estate in the world was Hong Kong on a per square meter basis. Number two was Vancouver. Number three was Sydney.
up there.
So it certainly is an expensive thing, and the last thing you want to do is to make a mistake with it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was up in Hong Kong a few years back, and I actually went and saw what was regarded as the most expensive per square foot piece of real estate in Hong Kong.
Not special.
Just to have a look at that site, that corner, the busyness of it is incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's very bustly, and of course they're stacked on each other, so that would increase the square meter.
Yeah, you bet. And it was funny watching some of the stores that were actually on that real estate were selling $2 items. You know, so the turnover, the volume to pay the rent, phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Choosing the right property is crucial. We've already mentioned the fact that you should, you know, go for a keen price. Obviously, there are a few things that you've got to tick. Shops, you've got to sort of have transport.
Yeah, you want to be near all the nice things. So your supermarkets, your shops, your schooling, all those sorts of things. But it depends. If your target market, if you're targeting a, you know, young, successful couple that have got good disposable income, then those things aren't as important to you because tenants will come and go. They might stay for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years and move on as their life moves on. You know, so So if you're targeting a particular market demographic, when you renovate the property, you renovate it to that target market and you'll get a premium rent. And that gives you a premium return. And if your property is highly desirable, you're going to be in front.
A lot of people who are buying their home obviously want to fall in love with it before they buy it. And, you know, you often see people at auctions absolutely distraught after the event if they fall short of the amount that's required. With investment properties, it's a slightly different mindset, isn't it? It's not so much that you've got to love the property, but it's just got to be the practical elements to it.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it's more about you go to shopping with your checkbook. As I say to my clients, when we're looking to buy a property that we're going to renovate versus a home that we're going to live in, I say we're going shopping with our checkbook and our calculator. And if the numbers stack, the numbers stack. But when you're buying a home, it's a little bit different. If you sometimes might pay more than you should or you would as an investor for something that you're going to live in. And that's just the way it is. It's an emotional thing. If you're going to be there 10, 20 years and you pay a few dollars extra, you average that out. Hey, you put a price on your happiness.
Exactly. So how much can you increase value without spending a lot of money? You come from a trade background, so you've been a carpenter and you know, a very practical guy. But you've also been in the real estate marketing side of it as well.
Yeah.
Is it possible to buy a property and turn it around fairly quickly and make money on it these days?
You can. And what I tend to do and what I've written about is what I've done over those years and honed down. I've done all sorts of things from, you know, major to minor type renovations, and I've sort of found...
So, I mean, some of us are, you know, distinctly not practical.
Yeah.
So, you know, therefore you're, you know, often at the behest of tradespeople to do the work that you need.
You are. And look, at the same time, you know, I must say I learn a lot on the run. I've made probably, you know, more mistakes than I wanted to, and you learn obviously those lessons from that. And I wasn't an expert at colours and design and floor plan and all. I learnt those things along the way, but I still call in experts today. You know, if I'm renovating a property, I'll pull in other people to get their opinion because you know, it's sometimes one little idea can make such a massive difference.
Is it best if you're dealing with an investment property to keep things fairly generic? In other words, neutral shades and you know, not too many statements.
Definitely.
Because sometimes, you know, if you let your own personal taste interfere, it sometimes can muck it up for a lot of people.
Yeah, look, you see some wacko things out there. I mean, I'm looking at 20, maybe 30 properties a week, and you see some pretty interesting designs and ideas that people have got.
So the very first unit I bought a long time ago, it had the strangest, marbled wall painting in the bathroom. And, you know, like the first thing I did was to get rid of it. But it actually put a lot of people off because they walked in and there was this sort of marble effect paint that they put on the wall. And it was obviously to their taste, but, you know, very few others would have had it there for long.
Yeah.
And it something as simple as a paint job can sometimes be quite off-putting if you're, you know, trying to sell something.
Oh,
it just, you know, gives people, you know, the wrong feel about the property.
Yeah, I absolutely. Look, I went back when I was a sales agent before I did what I do now as a buyer's agent. When we would go to some homes and they would sit on the market, they didn't sell, and you know, we'd come in and say they own it, say, why didn't it sell? I said, well, it's your carpet and your paint and a few little things.
The purple carpet has to go.
We need to change those things. And you know, we're not necessarily going to get you another $20,000 for doing the work, but what it will do is it'll get your home shifted, because these things are blocking people making a decision, and inevitably you would make those changes and the home would shift. So that does happen, and it very much so can put people off.
Even throwing a paintbrush around and, lighter, brighter colours, probably, the first step to improve it.
Yeah, look.
A clean look.
Yeah. Feature walls can be good, but don't make them too bold. You know, you want to make jazz a property up, but you also got to renovate to your market. If it's inner city versus suburban areas, you know, you'll do different things. So you need to research your market as to what that demographic, what those people are looking for. You don't want to be too edgy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I suppose this is a big renovation, but a lot of people advise against, for example, putting pools in. They say that it can actually be a downgrader as far as the property value is concerned, but you say it depends on where you're doing that.
Correct. Yeah, it depends. As you look at your market, I mean, well, a lot of people might want to put a pool in, but if you're in a beachside suburb, not highly important. If you don't have if that pool's going to take up most of the backyard, not a great idea.
How valuable is a parking space?
Very. Depending on, again, the suburb. You know, you put a parking space in, say, somewhere like Kirribilli or Bondi in Sydney, which is the market I know very well, a parking space, depending on the value of the property, again, it'll jump. So you know, you could look at, say, let's talk about an apartment I know of, say $600,000 one-bedder in Kirribilli. That parking space there would be worth somewhere around the $60,000 to $80,000 mark. You know, so that's the sort of money that these parking spots can command with an apartment. But you put that on a house in the same suburb, and that parking spot can jump up to nearly $200,000 worth of value.
Wow.
Yeah, because the house might be worth $2-3 million, and if you don't have a parking spot, that's going to prevent the property really being appealing to a wide part of the market. So you need at least one. Now, the second one may not be worth as much pro rata, but it's going to be worth substantial money.
So if the property doesn't have one, developing one would be a good plan.
If you can whack one in, you bet. And that's something we look to do. You know, one of the renovation projects that I used in the book as an example, because I've put about 10 case studies in there to give people an idea of what, with the real numbers of what really did happen, what we bought it for, what we did to it, and what the finished product was and the profits and the costs. And one of the places we did, we actually put a couple of off-street parking places in. Into a terrace in the inner west. And that sort of thing really can add a lot of value.
Because if you're looking at an upmarket professional couple, it's likely they're going to have two cars. And if it's in an inner suburb of Brisbane, Melbourne, Adelaide, yeah. Perth, it's parking is a premium.
You bet. Certainly is worth it. I mean, you look at another example. I know to everyone around Australia, I'm using Sydney examples. It's just because that's where I'm based and I know that market very well. If you look at your traditional old-style Paddington Terrace, I mean, they still will go for $1.5 million with no parking. You know, you just think that you sort of scratch your head and go, what, three-bed terrace with no parking, it still pulls that kind of money. You whack parking on there, you get another 150 to 200 grand.
Yeah, and also, of course, there's these new initiatives where there's cars that are given a particular space and you can rent them by the hour. So a lot of people saying, well, no, I'll ditch the car completely and just, you know, get a car by the hour if I need it, or, you know, take taxis.
Well, if you're not using one regularly, it's a very, very good idea. I mean, a car, you're really not going to walk away for an average car. It's going to cost you at least 10 a year to keep on the road, maybe more, and that's without factoring in if you're leasing it and you've got insurance costs and all those sorts of things on top. So, you know, you can really spend some big bucks. So if you're, you know, you might be cheaper just to spend $100 a week on taxis and you know, rental cars when you need them.
Some of your criteria in looking for an investment property include landlocked property. In other words, one bordered by a national park or water. It's pretty rare.
Oh, I love that sort of property. You want to get into areas where you can't be built out. Now, I don't believe that we're going to go down the road of, say, somewhere like Singapore and resume land and fill it in and you know, create more land and build property on that in front of other property. But if you can get property that's beachfront or, you know, on peninsulas or coastal areas where there's limited supply or you've got national parks surrounding you, then that's a good thing. Because that is going to actually force value by supply and demand in itself up. Whereas if you go to areas that, you know, they can just keep cutting up paddocks and, you know, with acreage and acreage, and they just keep expanding the urban sprawl, then that's going to actually keep values fairly low in those areas. Because if it's, even though you, if you're 25 minutes or you're an hour out of the city, and what's another 10 minutes up the road, you know, and they can put in, you know, tens of thousands of lots on a few hectares.
Yeah. I was in Darwin recently, and they're having a boom at the moment simply because of the gas pipeline that's about to, you know, produce a lot of jobs. And I think the most recent announcement on property there is that the 1,000-square-meter home sites are going to be allowed to be split in two, and you can build another house on your bit of land. And I suppose it's, you know, going to be constantly pressured, isn't it? You know, the major 80% of us live on the coast.
Yeah, and that's where we want to live.
Mm.
And that's where the demand is. And that's where, and that's why that's a smart thing to do, is to stick to a capital city coastal, because that is where demand's always been, and it's most likely going to continue. And that's your safest, it's what I typically call the bulletproof style of investing. You know, it's not going to necessarily do anything crazy and like some of the markets that you might speculate on, but it's going to be pretty solid. And I don't think property is something, you know, you want to speculate with.
Value for money. You say research the market over a 2 to 3 month period, inspecting 10 properties a week. In other words, do your homework.
Correct. Yeah, that's what you should be definitely doing. If you want to know the market as well as the sales agent, because they're the ones who you're going to need to be, you are competing against really when you start negotiating to buy a place, you need to be as informed as them as you can. And one way to do that is to essentially look at 100 properties. And that's only 10, 12 properties a week for 8 to 10 weeks.
Mm.
It's a great investment. You think about the time that you would put into that, you're talking about maybe a couple hundred hours. And that can save you several thousand dollars. In fact, it could be the most better paying than your hourly rate now that you're working.
Sure. I suppose the other issue with this is also sometimes you are manipulated a little bit by the real estate agent. When we were looking for a property about 10 years ago, we went to one particular property which will remain nameless, and you know, the quote that was given at the door by the agent was, you know, way under what I imagined it was worth. And I said, sort of, you know, are you seriously contemplating that? And he sort of said, well, what the talk is. And I sort of said, okay. So I lost interest in the property, went along to the auction anyhow, and the first bid was about $100,000 in excess of his estimate for the value of the property. And of course, it just went sky high from there. And it was just nowhere near what the reality of the property was. And so sometimes you feel as though you've been manipulated, and if you think that you can afford the property and go to, you know, the trouble of having the pest inspections and the building inspections and all the rest of it, and then discover that it's out of your league, it really is disappointing.
Well, that's, yeah, that's another problem in itself, the underquoting side of things that happen in the industry. It goes on. It's unfortunate. The OFT are trying to rule it out, but they won't, because there's always a way around these things. It's just like closing a tax loophole. People will find a way.
So you've got your investment property, you've got it in the right area. Where do you start when it comes to renovation?
Well, you start actually before you purchase the property with, actually should know what you're going to do with the property and where it's going to end. So when I'm looking at a property, I'm thinking, what is this end value? When I take this property to its highest and best use, what does it look like and what is it worth? And then I work backwards. Okay, so start with the end in mind. So if this property, just to ease of numbers, is going to end up being around the 700 range, then what we do is it's going to cost 100 grand to get it there. Then we think, well, 600 is my break-even point. So then every dollar below that, I've got some profit in my pocket.
Mm.
And that is how you work it.
So do you use a percentage of the purchase price as your guesstimate of how much it's going to cost?
No, I don't. It's not as simple as that. And you'll hear people think it is, and I'm not a fan of that strategy. You know, I've got to make 10 or 20 or whatever percent. Pick a dollar figure that you need to make for your time and effort, because some properties require a lot of effort and others don't. So I look at it more on a number of different ways. You can look at it as a percentage. You could look at it as a dollar figure, but I choose to look at it as a dollar figure. So if I'm going to spend, you know, 8 weeks doing this project, it's going to take up, you know, 60 hours, 80, 100 hours of my time, and I can make 30 grand out of it in increased value, then what's that my hourly rate going to be? That's attractive, I'm in.
Do you often have to involve the local council? You know, in other words, do you get council approval for stuff that you do, or do you keep it, you know, to addressing the issues internally?
Yeah, I certainly have done that, and it's not easy and not fun, and there's got to be a big carrot and a reward at the end to do it. So it's all about reward on effort. Personally, if I can avoid the council thing, I will, and that's generally avoiding roof line changes. So once you start changing roof lines, or you're adding garages, things like that, you know, big decks, things that involve council, by all means, do it, but make sure that you're getting the return for the effort, because that does take time. I remember one of the projects I did, I whacked a double garage on a property a couple of years back, and it's just unbelievable, with the neighbours objecting and this, and then the bloke across the road had an objection. It took us nearly 6 months just to get the approval. So, you know, whilst the house was still rented out while we were trying to get that done, it just takes up headspace and time.
Yeah.
Whereas I could have been in and out on, if I didn't need council approval, I could have been in and out inside 2 months.
Yeah. And sometimes, as you say, the complaints from the neighbours are really not justified. They just feel like it's worth objecting for the sake of objecting.
Yeah, I never get that. I don't understand it, because I think they should welcome it. Because all they're doing is, if their neighbours are improving their property, then it's lifting the value of the street, and that's going to have a rub off. I just don't understand this objection. I understand objection to bad development, bad design, you know, ugly stuff, but the majority of it isn't.
Patrick, what's it like in the finance world at the moment, trying to get capital for buying and for renovating?
Not too difficult. No, not too difficult. Look, the banks are willing to lend. If you've got a good job and you've got equity, then they're willing to lend. It's just the high-end risk type loans that they're not getting involved with. And it's people that are leveraging themselves too high, and that don't have secure jobs and things like that, they're staying away from. But if you've got equity and property and you're not gearing yourself too high, then the bank's quite happy. They've got plenty of cash, and they're, you know, we know that from reading the papers, that they're keen to lend it, and they're giving pretty attractive deals at the moment.
Mm. Just some key things as far as investing in property. You've noted in the book, focus on price over quality.
Definitely. I'm happy to pay a little bit more for a quality position, because I know that that quality position is going to be secure for the long term. It's going to add more capital value in an A-grade position over a D-grade position. And it'll be, the market will be more forgiving of something that's in a quality spot.
Do your research, because the market's constantly moving.
It is. Yeah, it changes. When you go back way back, you could, you know, the market might take 6 to 12 months to make changes. Now we can have almost a 12-month worth of market cycle in one quarter, where the market's gone up, down and sideways, all in a quarter, and you'll see changes move month to month. Watch supply. You know, those things are important. Like I keep a track on what's on the market at that point in time. So how many properties for sale have we got? What's stock levels?
How long it's been on the market.
Yeah, but it's more so about the stock levels of what your competition is as well. So you might have, you know, 30,000 homes on the market typically, and if the market spikes up to 40,000, you know, that's an extra 30% more stock on the market right now. Therefore, there's more choice. You can be more aggressive with your offers.
Being lazy, you say, is where you can get yourself into real strife. The fed-up purchase is not a good buyer.
No, we help out a few people with those, getting out of them. I probably bump into a few people every few months that have bought a property within the last 12 or 18 months. And it's what I labelled the fed-up purchase, because they were just sick of looking, and they went, this will do. We'll make the home what we want. We'll just buy it and we'll renovate it. When they've got the quotes in to do the work, the cost of doing the work is going to overcapitalise, and they'll become the most expensive property in the street by far. Therefore, some people go ahead and do the work and don't think. Others pause for a moment and go, oh. And it's often cheaper to sell and rebuy again, even with your in and out costs of like 10-12%. By the time you've gone in, out, back in, it can be cheaper to do that. Now, so the fed up purchase is an expensive experience.
Come back to bite you. Not following a requirements list and ticking it off as you go. In other words, you know, being very businesslike about the purchase.
Yeah, and you should be. And that's by having it. We all go to the shops and we all have half a dozen things in our mind. Sometimes we're just going to duck down the shops. We don't take a written down list. We get 3 of the 6 things we wanted and 7 other things that we didn't want. You know, we've all done that. And that's the same when you go property shopping. So you need to get clear on what you're after and tick that off. Make sure you've got that and don't miss it.
My guest tonight is Patrick Bright. He's authored a book called The Insider's Guide to Renovating for Profit. Includes 50 tips on how to add value fast to the property. Maybe you are out there and doing it at the moment. I'm wondering whether you, you're trudging around every Wednesday and Friday and Saturday looking for the investment property or looking to renovate. Perhaps you've had experience in renovations that have gone horribly wrong or ones that have gone horribly right. I'd love to hear success stories and failure stories. But if you would like to talk about the renovating process, maybe you're in the process at the moment and you'd like to ask a question for Patrick. As I said, he has a background in the trades as well as the practicality of actually putting putting properties to market. Love to hear from you.
Across Australia, this is Tony Delroy's Nightlife. Tony Delroy's Nightlife.
Tis 2:16 minutes to the latest ABC News. The Insider's Guide to Renovating for Profit, Patrick Bright's book, is the subject for discussion tonight. We're talking about renovations, things that have gone right for you, maybe things that have gone horribly wrong that you're still talking about. Russell, you want to talk about electrical appliances and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. I'm getting ready to sell my place, and I was wondering, what's the value of things like installing air conditioning, replacing dishwashers, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. If you're going to, it depends on the rest of the house. So what you want to do is make the house consistent and also area. If the area in the suburb that you're in and the other houses have these things, the air conditioners and things that you're competing with, so look at what else is on the market and look at the price range. Then if you need to match and mirror match that if you want to help shift your property without a little bit of objection. So someone's going to be worth for $2,000 or $3,000, or it could be for a larger home, maybe $10,000 to throw in some split systems, can be worth the investment.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those things where I think particularly also if you're selling in summer and you haven't got air conditioning, sometimes it's a major downside, you know. And if people can do the walkthroughs and feel the benefit of the air conditioning or whatever, one of those things that will assist your sale, I'd imagine.
Yeah, also with renting out a property, tenants will ask for it and you can actually get a good return on investment there, because you can put, for most, say, an apartment, $3,000 to $4,000, whack in a great split system, you can get another $20 to $30 a week rent for that. It'll pay it off in a few years for you, and it'll last you a lot longer.
All right, thanks for the advice.
Thanks, Russell. Good to hear from you. Paul, you were saying that people should rule out the auction sites when they're renovating.
They should not rule out the auction sites. I had a experience with some local builders down where I am, and we were renovating a bathroom and another smaller room adjacent, and the all-up cost was about $7,000 to $8,000 plus installation. And we didn't even like the stuff that the guys were picking up. You know, they were basically going down to the local plumbing store and whacking on another 20%. So if they go out to some of these Sydney-based auction houses, like out at Wetherill Park and a couple of other ones that I know of,
25 is vacant, coming back to Colorado.
Then they should take the time to go on the internet.
Yep.
And check out their listings and arrange a time to go over, have a look through the sheds, because a lot of the stock comes from shops that have either closed down or the businesses have gone broke or whatever. It's still brand new stock.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Paul, we were carpeting an apartment and we did that. We went to auction and we got a very, very good price on that, and it saved us, you know, probably $3,000 to $4,000 auction.
We were buying Spanish floor and wall tiles because there was no way in the world I was going to paint the walls in the bathroom. Yeah, because you're at it every 12 to 18 months anyway. And so we just went from floor to ceiling tiles, and instead of paying $85 a metre, we were paying $10.
Yeah, you certainly can. Look, I advocate getting out there and having a look. You can pick up some great deals at these discounted places.
Sorry to interrupt you. that people these days have to get off their backsides and value the dollar that they do have in their hand and stretch it that bit further. And if it means that some of these companies that have been there since year dot are going to have to lower their prices to be a bit more competitive, so be it. Okay? Remember, consumers, it's your dollar.
Exactly so. Paul, thank you very much for that. Great to hear from you. Chris, you want some tips on what to start to do when renovating?
Just find me now. Just finished painting. I only just settled a couple of weeks ago, but I'm just going to sort of semi-leave in it and try to do it up just to try and get some renters in there. I mean, the place is basically a dump when I moved in, but I think it's got a fair bit of potential. Just some sort of simple things to do to start off with. I don't know if you've already gone through that, but I just chimed in then. So
yeah, look, just clean it up, keep it nice and tidy. You want it, mate, what people want as a tenant. You've obviously got also go and talk to the local property manager and tell them the standard. Ask them to tell you the standard that it needs to be at to comply with the Act as well. Because some people don't do things to a good standard. So I know that that's a very important thing to do with property. So you want them clean, tidy, and fresh. That's what tenants want.
So the first thing is a paint job?
Paint, carpet, the simple stuff. Yep. It's not rocket science.
Floating floors,
yep.
Things like that. Okay, great.
But definitely go and talk. Before you renovate, go and talk to your local property manager because they're going to know what people want.
Real estate agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. Okay.
Okay, mate. Thanks for that. Good luck with it. Leonie, you wanted to renovate a property in a particular location.
Yeah, I've found a brilliant property in a really good location in terms of beachside. However, with the way that you were saying, you know, don't go for the D location, go for the A and the B. This is D, so it is on a main road, but the road and the area is looking to change within the next 5 to 10 years, with another sub road being built in to take the traffic off this road. Do you think it's worth taking the risk in buying something in that area with the view that it could change?
It could be, and that's a calculated risk you're going to have to take, I guess, if you do take it. So yeah, look, that buying properties on busy roads, I don't sort of go for that. So as you've suspected. But yeah, look, it could work out for you. It depends how certain those plans are. I mean,
Leonie, have you talked to local government about it, and do they have a clear vision about what's going to happen? clear vision from local government's a little hard to get sometimes.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's hard to actually define what they're actually going to be doing. But in the location that this is, it is prime in terms of the city and that kind of thing.
Look, I can tell you it will have an impact if it goes ahead. I mean, a good example I could give people, you know, I guess it's another Sydney based example, when the Lane Cove Tunnel went through and Epping Road was cut down from four lanes to one lane each way, and there was about 50 odd traffic changes, and we watched that, the master plan of that in Lane Cove, particular Eastwood area, Epping area, and a lot of roads turned into rat runs. So roads that were not busy, that I would have considered a B-grade, A-grade street, became D-grade street. And other roads that were probably a C or a D became an A, and the values did adjust.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It sounds like a bit of a lottery, Leonie. But maybe if you talk to local government and you know they've generally got a plan, whether they're going to carry it out, that's another issue. But you know they'll probably have to give you the current state of play, which might help. Stan, you are a building consultant.
Yes, yeah, and I do pre-purchase inspections. I just want to remind people that whenever they're doing planning to undertake any work, to just remember to make sure they do take out building permits for any structural work there. It's very obvious that, you know, where someone's tampered with the structure of a building, and if they haven't taken out permits, you know, it becomes a real good leverage to lower your price, let me tell you, or lose a buyer.
Yep, very good point, Stan. Glad you called in with that one.
Yeah. A great reference, if I could just refer people to, is the Building Commission. There's a practice note which when is a building permit required? So that way they all sort of really steer themselves with very relevant, credible advice.
Stan, could I ask, do you get a situation where sometimes government authorities step in and say, okay, well, that's got to come out as a result of you not getting the proper approval?
Well, let me tell you, if the municipal building surveyor was to become aware of any building work that was done without a building permit, they can come in, and they had the power to come into the property, like through proper channels and course of processes, and, you know, they can give you a direction notice to actually improve the work to bring it to standard or even to demolish. So, you know, there's been work that I've inspected that, let me tell you, the work has to be demolished. It's actually a danger to whoever buys the property. So, you know, just get people should just get proper advice before they attack things, or, you know, so that they're not actually making foolish mistakes and devaluing their property.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of property out there that actually doesn't comply, and that's why I strongly recommend that everyone gets a building inspection report before you exchange contracts to pick up things like that, and your lawyer should pick that up in the contract too. Every property contract should have a building certificate or survey. If it doesn't, ask the agent why.
Yeah, and Stan, I suppose using licensed tradesmen is a very important part of the equation as well.
Well, yeah, it's critical, and especially you know, for a homeowner, if they're doing, you know, they get a building contractor doing work over $5,000, for example, like a carpenter, bricklayer, anyone like that, they must be a registered trade. So, you know, that way they're assured that, you know, there's, you know, the person's actually capable of doing their work, and, you know, there's less chance that they're going to have a problem because that person wants to keep their registration. You know, they've invested a lot of money and credibility into their business, and it's actually a breach of the Building Act if a contractor wants to do the work without being registered.
And you've got some sort of insurance fallback too if they're registered tradespeople, I guess.
Well, absolutely. The Building Practitioners Board, you know, basically regulates, you know, the industry, and it's for the reason of making sure that consumers are protected, and it's there to make sure that contractors get the right price because there aren't the dodgy tradesmen out there.
Mm. And I think we've all seen the 6:30, you know, current affairs programs highlighting half finished buildings and buildings that are falling down after lock up. So it can be a nasty moment.
Can I tell you, sometimes doing an inspection, it's actually some of the old buildings. Let me tell you, something built in the, say, 70s, where, you know, it's tired. It wasn't built with the engineering standards of what we probably apply to today, but for what the old boys actually knew and put into building method, if they knew a bit of the technology we know today, those hams would stand hundreds of years. But when people come in, and sometimes some the renovators come in, they actually, the work, they would have been better to not touch some of the work because of how rough, you know what I mean, some of the building work is. It's just, it's sort of sad to see that people, you know, basically doing more damage than good sometimes.
It can happen. Thanks, Stan. Good to hear from you. Peter, you wanted to comment on developing properties next to neighbours.
Listen, the ABC steals most of its topics from the Sydney Morning Herald. They do all the legwork. In the Heckler, I think it was today, might have been yesterday, it's the story of someone who had a house built next to them.
I see.
And it took longer than the Empire State Building. It destroys their life, and your guest is saying they should be thankful. Those people are increasing the values of their houses. He is the biggest moron you have ever had on.
I guess Peter's not pro-development or moving ahead.
I think that is the general theory. He's not a fan, Patrick.
They're out there.
Absolutely. Now, we know at the moment that the property cycle has been up and down because of the European problems you know, the situation in the United States. Is it still possible to actually buy, renovate and get a profit in the current market?
Yes. Well, we're doing it. Yeah, so you just got to buy well, find a good location, and do your renovation project. Don't overdo it. Look, you know, take the example of The Block and the Renovators show last year. Great shows, great entertainment. I enjoyed watching them, and I'll watch them again if they give them another run this year.
Mm.
However, follow their recipe, and you lose money. None of those properties made a profit. Okay, so you
don't want to overdo it.
You don't want to overdo it. You know, and they didn't make a profit, and they didn't even include labor, which is 30 to 40% of your cost of doing a renovation. Mm-hmm. And they didn't include council fees and all those sorts of things. But they all had to get councils and DA approvals and all that. Mm. Where was that in the budget? They were given free pools, $10,000 prizes, working bees, all sorts of stuff, and they still didn't make a profit.
Yeah, so the average renovator is not going to get those bonuses, we promise.
No, and that's the thing. It's not a simple thing to do. It's not just like, go and buy this property, whack a bit of coat of paint on it, and it's all shilby apples. You've got to pick the right type of property. Because a lot of work that people do when renovating will actually... is unseen work that doesn't add value. So you've got to pick your mark.
The Insider's Guide to Renovating for Profit. Patrick Bright is the author. It's out by Bolger Publishing. And Peter from Newtown's not going to buy it. Thanks for coming in, mate.